You're listening to a High Voltage Radio Network podcast. Find more at highvoltageradio.com.
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
Down with the King for years, about 10 of them. Recruiting suckers, Mac and Mike and making men of them.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports program produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans who are not affiliated with a major network. I'm your host, the Godfather, Nate Milton, and I'm flying solo this week. My partner in crime, Brother Marcus Vandenberg, is enjoying his wedding anniversary with his lovely wife, so we wished him the best. Shout out to you, Brother Lightskin, and Mrs. Brother Lightskin. I hope you guys are having the time of your lives out there. But that don't mean that we're going to stop the show this week. We still have so much to talk to you guys about in the world of sports, in the world of sports entertainment, and just in the world of general ratchetness. So this week it's going to be a solo show, just you and me. I don't want to sound like Tony. It's just me and you. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of singing this week, too, because that's what we do around here when when Brother Marcus is unavailable. But we got a lot of things to talk about this week, of course. It was a busy, busy week in the world of sports and entertainment, whether we're talking about the NCAA finals, both on the men's side and the women's side, whether you're talking about opening day in Major League Baseball, whether you're talking about the NBA coming down to the wire as the season is about to end, or even a little small event you might have heard of taking place out in Dallas, Texas this past weekend, WrestleMania 32. So we got a couple topics on the board, and then I don't know if we're going to get to all of them this week, but I think what I'm going to do in honor of WrestleMania, in honor of Texas and one of Texas's favorite sons, the incomparable Stone Cold Steve Austin, I think what I'm going to do is pick the six topics that interest me the most this week. Yes, I'm going to open up a six pack of questions and answers on you guys and girls out there this week. So without any further ado, in the words to paraphrase Brother Stone Cold, if you want to see me open up a six-pack of questions on these sumbitches, give me a hell yeah. I said, give me a hell yeah. Well, all right. Let's start with WrestleMania, since I'm feeling that WrestleMania spirit. WrestleMania 32 was this past weekend from Cowboys Stadium, Jerry World, AT&T Stadium out there in Dallas, Texas. And it was an event. It wasn't the best WrestleMania I've ever seen, but it also wasn't the worst WrestleMania I've ever seen. It was something where, even though the build going into the show wasn't the best, I was still excited for WrestleMania itself. And I think if you're looking at WrestleMania from the standpoint of strictly a pro wrestling show in terms of in-ring work and what went on bell to bell, it was a pretty good show. You could make the argument that this was one of the 10 best WrestleManias ever. Like, if I was just going to grade this in terms of the in-ring stuff on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably put this at an 8 or a 9. But we all know wrestling is more than that. There has to be an emotional connection. There has to be something that draws you in. And I think that was not there for a lot of these matches. Also, I think the booking decisions that were made were counterproductive in a lot of ways. So from the booking and storytelling standpoint, I'd say WrestleMania probably a 3 or 4 out of 10. So overall, we're probably looking at a 6 out of 10 Mania, which, you know, it isn't great, but it's not the worst WrestleMania ever either. So for those of you that missed the show, just going to kind of hit on some of the big matches, the high-profile matches that went down. Of course, we had Brock Lesnar with Marcus's boy, Paul Heyman, beating Dean Ambrose in a no-holds-barred street fight. We had Charlotte defeat Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks to retain. I guess she retained the Divas Championship, but she also won the brand new WWE Women's Championship, a.k.a. the Red Velvet Cake Belt, because everybody loved birthday cake. Red Velvet! I mean, that's what it looks like to me. It looks like it's no shade on the women, but it just looks like a piece of red velvet cake, which is not only worthy of a champion, but it's delicious and delightful. So Charlotte is the newly crowned WWE Women's Champion. We saw the New Day take on the League of Nations, and they lost, which would not be the only questionable booking decision that happened during the evening. And after that match, we saw Stone Cold Steve Austin, we saw the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels, and we saw Mick Foley come out and help the New Day take out the League of Nations. And then Xavier Woods got a stunner for his trouble. So while it was a memorable segment, I don't know how much that segment did to help the New Day, but it was certainly a memorable WrestleMania moment. AJ Styles in a match that I was really anticipating, even though we've seen them match up a couple times heading into WrestleMania. AJ Styles was defeated by Chris Jericho in a singles match, and this is when it really got me scratching my head, particularly when you think about what they did the next night on Raw, where AJ Styles became the number one contender to the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. It's like, wouldn't you want this guy to have all the momentum going into this title chase? And also from the standpoint of AJ needed that WrestleMania moment, and I don't know if it was the right idea for them not to give it to him, especially when you consider Chris Jericho is a guy that's put over Fandango. He's put over Bray Wyatt. He's put over CM Punk. He's put over guys before. And that's kind of his role at this stage of his career. But for whatever reason, they decided not to have him put AJ Styles over, which is a bad call, in my opinion. We saw the Usos beat the Dudley Boys. I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. It's cool. We saw Kalisto retain his United States Championship over Ryback. We saw in what was maybe one of the more entertaining matches of the night, we saw Baron Corbin from NXT not only make his main roster debut, but he won the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal, which featured a lot of interesting characters. This is maybe why this is my favorite match of the night, because not only did we get the guys that we thought were going to be in there, and personally, I think, I don't know if Baron Corbin going over was the right decision, because I think I would have given it to Mark Henry in what's probably going to be his last WrestleMania, but that's neither here nor there. To me, what was really cool about the Battle Royal were the surprise entrants, and not only did we get an appearance from the master of the Diamond Cutter himself, DDP, but we also got an appearance from the big fella, the Diesel, Wilt Chamberlain himself, Shaquille O'Neal. Yes, Shaq was in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal and actually did a pretty good job. He gave a pretty good showing. Him and Big Show were paired up most often, and they got some pretty good run before both were eliminated. But Baron Corbin was your winner. Again, I would have given that to Mark Henry. But it's all right. It's okay. He gonna make it anyway. Besides, it's not like the fate of Raw and, by extension, the fate of the WWE as a whole was riding on that Andre the Giant Battle Royal. No! That was saved for the Hell in a Cell featuring Shane, look at my Air Force One McMahon, and the Dead Man, the legend, The Undertaker. And in what was a surprise to me, at least, The Undertaker defeated Shane McMahon in what was pretty much a straight-up wrestling match. You know, this is the match where I thought they were going to go the route that they went with Triple H and Sting last year. Sting, by the way, props on that retirement, man. We will get to that in a second. But this match was pretty much a straight-up match with Shane and Taker. And, of course, you know, you had the big spot with Shane jumping off the top of the Hell in a Cell, which I was worried for that boy, man. I was like, come on, Shane. You ain't got to do this, man. You ain't got to prove anything, man. Don't do it, Shane. But no, Shane had to climb up to the top and jump from the top of the Hell in a Cell through the table. And this wasn't a bad match. It was just too long, in my opinion. If you were going to do Taker and Shane straight up, then it needed to be a little bit shorter, because this match went, I think, 25, 30 minutes, including the introductions. And that's way too long without, you know, the smoke, the mirrors, the run-ins, all the things that we expected were going to go down at WrestleMania. But that being said, you know, I think Shane McMahon did a good job acquitting himself in that match, and they did the little respect spot at the end of the match. And then the next night on Raw, they kind of completely undermined the match. You know, there was a little deal at the beginning where Vince came out, and the night after Raw crowd, you know, they can be a little raucous. And for whatever reason, Vince gave control of Raw to Shane for one night. And, yeah, so I don't know where they're going with this thing. Dr. Phil's going to be on Raw this week coming up, which should be good or terrible or both. Like, let me tell you something, Vince. When you tell your son that he's not worth anything, he's going to feel worthless. He needs to feel that love, Vince. Because if you don't love your son, there's no chance in hell this family's going to get back together. And I should know I'm a fake doctor. So there's my Dr. Phil impression. You know, take it for what you will. But all that brings us to the main event, the big match of the card, the match they spent the past few months building towards. And really, if you want to think about it, the moment they've been building towards since last year's WrestleMania. And that is the coronation of Roman Reigns. Shout out to Jermaine out there in Chi-Town. That's his boy, I know. Roman Reigns defeated Triple H to win the WWE World Heavyweight title in a solid match. It wasn't a great match, but it was a solid match. I think that both guys went out there and gave it their all. Stephanie McMahon stole the show, though, in my opinion, coming out there looking like a cross between Sensational Sherry and Eva Lynn from He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. She took a spear. She was great. Like, Stephanie is great. But, yeah, Triple H dropped the belt to Roman Reigns, and now I guess Roman Reigns' new catchphrase, because everybody, well, at least all the hardcore fans want him to do a heel turn and become a bad guy. He's like, you know, I'm not a good guy. I'm not a bad guy. I'm the guy, which, you know, it works. It works. So it'll be interesting to see how Roman and AJ Styles kind of mesh. I think it'll be a good opponent for Roman Reigns, because if you remember, one of his best opponents in his entire WWE run so far was Daniel Bryan. I think they clicked. And, yeah, you could say Daniel Bryan carried a lot of the load, but it takes two to tango. And so I think AJ and Roman, it might surprise some people. So that was WrestleMania. It was a big weekend. I can't wait for Brother Marcus to get back so he can share his stories, including what did or did not happen with Brother Big Nasty, formerly of the Kings of Sport. Can't wait to hear his thoughts on, you know, hanging out there with Paul Heyman and some of the great stories he's got. One thing that Marcus did not attend, though, was the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony. And it was interesting. I watched the Hall of Fame ceremony this past Saturday night, and it was an eclectic class of inductees, from The Godfather to Jacqueline to Stan the Lariat Hanson, the Freebirds, Michael PSA's and Jimmy Jam Garvin, Snoop Dogg, Joan London, and of course, your headliner, the man called Sting. Yes, Sting finally got his due as a WWE Hall of Famer, and it was a great moment. He gave one of the best speeches on the show. It was honest and real. It was the perfect length, too, because some people on the show were too short, and others went way too long for their spot. But Sting's speech was just the right amount of time. It was heartfelt. It was real. There was some laughs in there. Then at the end, he kind of dropped, I don't know if it's a shocking bit of news, but it certainly was a sad bit of news, at least in terms of the fans, when he announced that he was going to retire, and he's retired effective immediately. And so, yeah, that's it. And there will be no more Showtime for the man called Sting, at least as an in-ring competitor. And he did say before he left that this wasn't goodbye. It's just so long for now. So who knows? Maybe we'll get to see Sting in an ambassador role for the WWE. Maybe we'll get to see him as a commissioner, as an authority figure. I think he'd do a great job with that. You know, he was very underrated in that role with TNA. But the interesting thing that struck me on Saturday night, and this is topic number two, Sting, Steve Borden, the Stinger, the icon, the legend, topic number two in our six-pack of topics this week. The thing that surprised me, or I'm not even going to say surprised me because it's kind of human nature, I guess, but the thing that made me laugh on Saturday night were so many people saying, oh, man, this guy's a Hall of Famer. He's a legend. He's one of the all-time greats, including a lot of people who did not vote for that man called Sting for the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. And I've talked about this a couple times on this show, as well as some Place to Be Nation shows and on Twitter. But yeah, for anybody that doesn't think Sting belongs in any wrestling Hall of Fame when it comes to the sport of pro wrestling, I don't know what you've been watching. You know, either you don't know, you don't show, or you don't care what's going on in the hood, because Sting has been doing this. You know, it's not just the longevity. You know, 30 years in a game, in this game. But it's the way that this guy conducted himself in and out of the ring. It's the innovation that he brought as a young wrestler with some of the high-flying moves that we really weren't seeing in North America at the time. It's the character work when he turned into that quote-unquote Crow Sting and went to the Raptors and was one of the biggest reasons why WCW became so hot in that mid-90s period. And let's not discount what he did in TNA. You know, yeah, it's a small pond, and he was the biggest fish in that small pond for a little while. But he gave them legitimacy. And, you know, he's a TNA Hall of Famer, rightfully so. Now he's a WWE Hall of Famer. So there's, by my count, there's one Hall of Fame left that he needs to be inducted into, and that's the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. And I'm pretty sure he'll get it now, which is kind of ridiculous to me that after 1 year in the WWE, all of a sudden he becomes legitimized and now he can go into your Hall of Fame. But hey, you know, whatever. As long as things in there, it's cool with me. It's all right with me, Dave Meltzer. So let's go from one of the legends in the sport that retired in Dallas, Texas, to some legends in the making, perhaps, that did a great thing in Houston, Texas. And of course, we're talking about the NCAA Men's National Championship game, which pitted Villanova against the University of North Carolina Tar Heels. And I gotta say, this year's March Madness tournament was kind of just meh. You know, it was a 6 out of 10 tournament in the middle. But the first weekend of the tournament and the championship game were awesome. You know, the first weekend of the tournament where you had some upsets, Michigan State falling in the first round. It was fun. It was exciting. It's everything that first weekend of the tournament should be. The championship game, one of the best championship games ever. I'm not going to say it's the best because, you know, even though I wasn't really watching basketball at the time because I was a little young, you know, that NC State championship with Jim Valvano, people still put that high on the pedestal. You know, and those are people older than me that watched the game at the time, so I respect their opinion. So I can't say that this was the best championship game of all time, but it's up there. It's in the discussion. It's in the conversation. But yeah, it was like the middle part of the tournament was just kind of, yeah. But the opening weekend and, of course, that championship game were really great. And so let's get into the championship game. Villanova and Coach Jay Wright defeated Roy Williams, UNC Tar Heels, by a score of 77-74. And this was ridiculous. I mean, the game was close pretty much the entire way through. And in the last minute, we saw Marcus Page from the Tar Heels hit a game-tying three-pointer, only to be foiled just a couple seconds later by Chris Jenkins, hitting a game-winning three at the buzzer, a deep three, too. It wasn't just a, you know, your guard variety three-pointer. It was a deep three, and Villanova won 77-74 in what I would consider a mild upset. You know, Villanova wasn't some punk team off the street, but I think most people, most prognosticators, most analysts and quote-unquote experts going into this game had the Tar Heels winning. So it was a bit of a surprise, but, I mean, you got to tip your cap to the Villanova Wildcats who, like I said, man, this game was close all the way through. First half, Carolina was leading 39-34 at the half, and then Villanova came back and outscored Carolina 43-35 in the second half. So, you know, all respect and props in the world to Coach Wright and the Wildcats. And, yeah, shout out to Philly, man. Not a lot of good things if you're a sports fan in Philly. So this was definitely one of them. And hopefully now that little sad crying Piccolo girl from last year can get some peace. So shout out to the Villanova men's basketball team for winning the national championship. And I think in fairness and in the spirit of equal time and Title IX, you know what? Let's show some love to the ladies. I don't know why I started talking like the dude from the Quiet Storm right there. Leon Phelps, the ladies' man. Ooh, with the lady. Faith, we thing. Did you win the national championship? Can I buy you a fifth sandwich? Anyway, topic four, the NCAA Women's Championship. And the NCAA Women's Championship took place in Indianapolis, and it saw the UConn Huskies do it again. They defeated Syracuse 82-51. It really was not close at all. And they captured their fourth consecutive title. And it is Gino Auriemma's 11th national title during his time up in Connecticut. Yeah, I mean, what can you say? This is one of the greatest runs from any team we've seen collegiately ever. Breonna Stewart, she anteed up and won her fourth consecutive MOP trophy. See what I did there? And some are calling Breonna Stewart the greatest women's basketball player ever. And I don't know if I'd go that far. I mean, obviously, she's got a case. She deserves to be in the conversation. I mean, you know, four national championships and four most outstanding player in the tournament trophies. Like, that's some pretty nice credentials to put on the table. But I don't think she's the greatest. I think if on my personal list, my personal rankings of the greatest women's college basketball players of all time. And yes, I do have personal rankings of the greatest women's college basketball players of all time because I'm a sports weirdo at times. And I think about these things at random intervals during my week. But I've got Breonna Stewart from Connecticut at number 7 all time, behind Brittany Griner, behind Shamika Holeslaw, behind Lisa Leslie, behind Lady Magic Nancy Lieberman, and then I think for, I don't know, 1 and 2 in terms of the best players ever, if we're talking women's college basketball, I go back and forth because Cheryl Miller, again, kind of going to the NC State analogy that I used earlier. Like, I didn't get to see Cheryl Miller play college basketball, but everybody, all the old heads, all the old, you know, writers and reporters and fans, like if you go to the barbershop, they'll be like, man, at least Cheryl Miller wasn't no joke at USC. So I respect that opinion, and so I put Shirley at number 2 just because I didn't personally get to watch her. But my number 1 women's college basketball player of all time is Diana Taurasi. To me, she had the perfect combination of the physicality, but also, you know, she just had a high basketball IQ, and she had swag. Like, Taurasi had swag. So, yeah, that's my list. You know, Breonna Stewart, great. One of the 10 best women's college basketball players ever. Just not the best, in my opinion. But again, shout out to Coach Auriemma and the juggernaut that is the UConn women's basketball team. And I mean, it would not surprise me if they won another title next year. Like, they don't rebuild, they reload. So, yeah, they're always going to be in that conversation. Let's see. We are on topic numero cinco. I don't know why I just went bilingual right there. But, hey, it is what it is. So, topic number five. Let's stay on the hardwood, but let's go from the college ranks to the pro ranks and talk about your reigning and defending NBA world champions, the Golden State Warriors. With three games remaining in the NBA schedule, Golden State sits with a record of 70-9, just two wins shy of the 95 Bulls all-time season record of 72 wins. Last night, they won a game against the San Antonio Spurs in which Popovich did not sit everybody, which was kind of a surprise. They won 112-101 at Oracle Arena. And so the three remaining games on the Warriors' schedule are tomorrow night. Full disclosure, I'm recording this on Friday afternoon. So Saturday night, they play at Memphis. Then they have a back-to-back at San Antonio. And then they finish the season on the Wednesday, April 13th at the Grizzlies. So they need to win all three games to break the Bulls' record. And I think that they will not get there. I think they're going to tie the record. I think they beat Memphis tomorrow night. I think they lose to the Spurs in San Antonio. The Spurs still undefeated at home, which is just ridiculous. It's like, I don't know how the Spurs have flown under the radar when obviously they don't have the best record in the NBA, but they still got one of the best regular seasons we've ever seen. I think the Warriors are going to lose to the Spurs and then close out the season beating the Grizzlies. So I think they're going to finish with 72 wins and tie the Bulls' all-time record, which is, you know, pretty damn cool. Like, it's no small feat. Like, I think everybody is talking about the 73-win mark as if that's the number one goal for the season. When, if you listen to Steve Kerr, if you listen to Steph Curry, if you listen to Draymond Green or Iguodala, any of those boys out there, they are telling you, you know, 73 wins is nice. It's something that we want to get to, but it doesn't mean anything if we don't win that chip, if we don't win back-to-back rings. So I'm going to make a bold prediction here. I predict not only that the Warriors miss out on the mark of 73 wins, I think they end up tying the Bulls for the best record all time with 72 wins, but I think the Warriors will lose to the San Antonio Spurs in the conference finals, which means no back-to-back titles, which means this season, as great as it is, I don't know how you put it back into perspective, because the Warriors have set this mark. You know, they're a great team. Steph Curry, one of the greatest players in the NBA. But it's almost like they're at this all or nothing level. So I think they lose to the Spurs, though, in the Western Conference Finals. But we'll have plenty of time to talk about that the closer we get to the NBA Finals and the playoffs and all that good stuff. But according to my calculations, and granted, I'm no math major here, people. That's not what I do. That's not what I'm about. I'm about sports. I'm about love, man. Positivity in this world. You know, there's so many things in this world that try to divide us as people, you know, especially in this tense political election season that we're going through right now. So I think I want to end this week's show with a topic that brings some happiness to the world. And what I'm going to talk about right now is what I think is currently the best thing in the world. Now, this might not be the best thing in the world tomorrow. It might not be the best thing in the world an hour from now. But right now, as I'm recording this podcast, this to me is the best thing in the world. Now, I'm going to give you a little background on this, because I would not have seen this if I weren't talking with a friend last night. And she was watching the American Idol finale. And it was not only the season finale, but I guess it was the series finale after 15 years. American Idol took its final curtain call, and it was no more. And American Idol's interesting to me, man, because you look at the people that this show has produced, whether you're talking about like Carrie Underwood or Kelly Clarkson or even a Fantasia, Jennifer Hudson, people that have had some success in the music industry. Clay Aiken, Ruben Studdard, your man Chris Daughtry. Who's the boy? Soul Patrol. Was it Taylor Hicks? Is that the boy's name? Let me check that out real quick because I don't want to disparage the leader of the Soul. Yeah, man. Taylor Hicks, man, with his Jay Leno looking self. Soul Patrol. But anyway, I digress. But it always struck me as funny that they didn't have a better batting average when it came to mainstream success with these groups. You know, yeah, you had some monsters when it came to record sales and just getting the accolades like Carrie Underwood, like Kelly Clarkson. But you had a lot of people that just kind of fell through the wayside, slipped through the cracks. And I don't know why, because obviously these people had talent. Obviously they had a great platform for exposure with American Idol. And I don't know, maybe it's just that people, as the show progressed, people digested music differently. I don't know, you know, maybe, because people don't buy albums anymore. It's rare. You know, music is now a singles-driven industry. And so I don't know if people have the attention span, people have the patience to kind of watch an artist grow. Or maybe it was resentment that these people were kind of made from a reality show, which seems funny now because you get people that are, you know, discovered on YouTube or you know, other venues like that. And, you know, it always just struck me funny that these guys and girls didn't have more success. Like, to me, one of the more surprising kind of career arcs from anybody on American Idol was Ruben Studdard, the Velvet Teddy Bear. Big Rube! Because I thought, like, man, not only was he on probably one of the best seasons ever on American Idol when it came down to him and Clay Aiken, and it was just like this great buddy cop movie. You had this the gay Southern gentleman and Clay Aiken, and you had this big, overweight, happy dude in Ruben Studdard, and they were just like the best of friends. And it was like, hey, man, I love you, Clay. I love you too, Ruben. That was my Ruben Studdard, Clay Aiken impression. But that was just great TV. And it didn't feel manufactured, even though, you know, there probably was some elements of the show that was manufactured, because reality TV is only quasi-reality. But I thought Ruben Studdard was going to have a bigger career because, A, like, he, brother can sing. Like, even he showed up on the finale last night as, you know, they brought out all the old winners and a lot of the other contestants, the more memorable contestants. They even brought out William Hung on the jump, man. You remember the little Asian dude saying she bangs? I have no professional training. Like, the only dude that I needed to see, though, was the general, Larry Platt, pants on the ground, looking like a fool with your pants on the ground. That dude should have got some more love on the American Idol season finale. But anyway, Ruben Studdard, to me, had the voice. Like, there's no question that this brother could sing. He had the look. Like, he wasn't some R&B singer with a six-pack, as Kanye West would say, but he had that Gerald LaVert, that Barry White, like the big fluffy dude that you know was going to sing and melt the ladies' hearts. He had that look. But I don't know, man. Like, he had a pretty decent debut album, one with I Need an Angel on it. He had a very interesting gospel album. Like, I thought his gospel album was very underrated. And then he had the record Soulful, which had Sorry 2004, which is still like that's an underrated classic to me. Like, that's a legit makeup song. You know what I'm saying? Girl, this is my story for 2004, and I ain't gonna mess up no more this year. I'm gonna take this one chance to make it clear. I'm sorry for May, I'm sorry for June, I'm sorry for July, in case I didn't tell you. August, September, October, November, up to December, girl, you know that I'm sorry. Oh, big room. Oh, hey, I know that ain't everybody's cup of tea, man. But hey, it was either I was gonna sing One Shining Moment this week, or I was gonna sing something else, and that something else happened to be Ruben Studdard. I'm sorry, 2004. But yeah, I thought Ruben would have had a bigger career. But I mean, I guess it's just the way things work out, man. Like, yeah, I still think, man, Big Rube got records in him, man. Big Rube got some records in him, but. We're also in a climate where R&B is just not what it once was either. Like, who are your R&B leaders these days? I guess you got D'Angelo, who is as reliable as Otis Nixon. Shout out to Kings of Sport, Segment 4 Hall of Famer Otis Nixon. Or you've got Chris Brown. And you know, hey, Breezy's put out some great songs, but he's also a guy that beats women. And that's not cool. That's our official stance here on the Kings of Sport. Beating women, not cool. So, yeah, man, I think there's a vacuum in terms of R&B singers that Big Rube could fill. But I got a little bit off course, so let's get back to the best thing in the world right now besides the Demi Lovato Path to Fame mobile game, which, hey, I'm a man. I ain't got no shame in my mobile games. The Demi Lovato Path to Fame game is something that my nieces got me hooked on when they was here last week. And, yeah, it's weird because, you know, we were playing the game, and at first, the first thing that messed me up on the Demi Lovato game is I thought you could choose to be a boy or a girl. And so I put in my name. I was going to be Percy Jenkins. I was going to bring soul music back, like I was just talking about with Ruben Studdard. I was going to bring it back. But they only let you be girls on the Demi Lovato Path to Fame game. And so now I got this little blonde white girl running around named Percy Jenkins. And she's like, I am a boy, Damon. I am a boy, Demi Lovato. So, yeah, that game is bananas. But it's a little addictive, man. It's a little addicting. But no, the Demi Lovato Path to Fame game is not the best thing in the world. The best thing in the world is a commercial that aired during the American Idol season/series finale. And the crazy thing about this commercial, this is an ad for Apple Beats, and it features three people that individually I really don't care for, but collectively they made magic in this commercial. And it stars Taylor Swift along with the music of Future and Drake. So what I'm going to do right now, guys, is play a clip of the commercial, and then I think we're also going to post the video on the Kings of Sport Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport, so you can see the pictures along with the audio. But yeah, you got to hear this because it literally made me laugh for the remainder of last night all the way to when I woke up this morning to this very moment. So without any further ado, here is Taylor Swift, T-Swizzle, along with Drake and Future.
Man, I hate cardio. Activity playlist, running, hashtag gym flow, Drake and Future. All right.
If your mentor don't trust you, I'm gonna shoot you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Halloween.
I'm gonna shoot you.
Yeah.
Jumpin', them boys up to something. They just spent like 2 or 3 weeks out the country. Them boys up to something, they just not just bluffing. You don't have to call, I hit my dance like Usher, woo. I just found my tempo like I'm DJ Mustard, woo. I hit that Ginobili with my left hand, I'm like, woo.
I say it's a leap for all my babies that I miss. Chicken finger, french fry for them that want to dance.
Woo! Oh, man, you have got to see the commercial. Like, the audio was great, but the video that accompanies it, oh, man. Like, it is just perfect. Like, you've got T-Swizzle, Swifty, as the peeps call her, I guess, just on the treadmill, running. Like, Taylor Swift, I'm not going to say Taylor Swift isn't a great singer. You know, she good. That girl good. But she is not the most graceful person, shall we say. Like, her dance moves when she's on all those award shows, very awkward. Like, very Elaine Bennis from Seinfeld. Like, if you want the stereotypical Caucasian dancing, it is Taylor Swift. And her running is very much like that, very stilted, very robotic, very mechanical. And just to see that motion along with her singing along to Jumpman, and then the way the commercial ends with her falling off the treadmill and still keeping going with the beat, it's a very clever commercial. I was not expecting that to come on my TV screen on a Thursday evening. I was very surprised. Great job by the people at Apple. They did it big with that one. I give them props on that one. So the Taylor Swift Apple Beats commercial featuring Drake and Future's Jumpman is right now the best thing in the world. So go see it. Make yourself happy. If you're having a bad day, if you're on your way to work and you don't want to be at work, pause the podcast right now. Go on YouTube, watch the video, come back to the podcast as you're headed to work and laugh with your boy Nate, because that commercial is just phenomenal. It's fantastic. Whew. Well, speaking of phenomenal and fantastic, I hope that you guys and girls felt that this week's episode of the podcast was phenomenal and fantastic. Even though it was just myself this week, I hope that I held it down for the crown, as it were. But don't you guys worry, because next week, Brother Marcus will be back in the house. And I'm sure we'll get to a lot of his great stories from the time he spent over WrestleMania week out there in Dallas. And it's going to be fun times, man. It's you never know what to expect on this show, but you can always know that we are going to deliver when it comes to entertainment, when it comes to being thought-provoking, because that's what we do. That's why we are the world's most dangerous sports show, the Kings of Sport. If you want to holler at us, if you want to give us your thoughts and opinions, if you see this Taylor Swift commercial and you're like, oh, man, I got to show Nate some love, man. I got to give the Kings of Sport some dap for bringing this wonderful joy into my life. You can hit us up on all various forms of social media. You can check out Marcus Vandenberg on Instagram as well as Twitter at Marco Will, MarcoWill at Marco Will. You can check me out on Twitter in the number 8, MozaiK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. If you want to check out my Instagram, which, you know, every now and then I will post some things on Instagram. But it's not like my favorite app in the world. Like, it's cool, but I just don't take that many pictures of myself. You know, maybe I'm just a humble gentleman. You know, that's one of, I might be the most humblest person in the world. If you think about it, I am the greatest at being humble. So if you want to check out my pictures, head over to Instagram and look up Black Nate, BLAQUE _ in the number 8, because I like to make things difficult. Black Nate on Instagram. You can follow the show on Twitter, KOS_POD, The Cos Pod on Twitter. Facebook, facebook.com/The Kings of Sport. And of course, check us out on YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. Thank you guys and girls each and every week for downloading the program. We appreciate it. So join us back here next week for another all-new, fun-filled, action-packed edition of the world's most dangerous sports show, The Kings of Sport. So again, shout-out to Brother Marcus and his lovely wife on their wedding anniversary. Shout-out to y'all for checking out the show. And shout-out to me for bringing that Taylor Swift commercial to light, because, yeah. God bless American Idol for allowing me to see that commercial, because it's just great. Like, I think I'm gonna watch it 5 more times when I finish recording today. So let me get out of here so I can go watch me some T-Swizzle. So for Marcus Vandenberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. Jumpman live on TNT. I'm flexing. Woo! Jumpman, they gave me my own collection. Ooh, jump when I say jump, girl. Can you take directions? Ooh, Mutombo with the bitches. You just keep getting rejected. Woo! Told you there's gonna be some singing this week, 'cause you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's X.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?